Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. Female peak week, how to nail females on stage with getting them all right. What do you do with water, deloading them throughout prep? What are the misconceptions around peaking females? Because there are quite a few, and I think a lot of things that get passed from peaking males is just given to females and just assumed that, hey, they're just going to be smaller individuals. We just do this on a smaller scale. And that's not always the case. And I think we've created a lot of misconceptions around peaking the female athlete, but also terminology that's been used that's given to females that also just convolutes their understanding of what are things that really make someone hard. And then you also have the judge's feedback around getting, you know, you needed to be fuller. So what does that mean? And so Luke and I today, we're going to break this all down and try to simplify the female peak week and give some good takeaways for that message to make it a little bit clearer for everyone.
Yeah. And I think the hardest part to nail is the relative to class need. I think when you start to look at comparisons of athletes across the different classes available for females, the variance in conditioning standards for bikini all the way up to WPD or women's bodybuilding are so much larger than the variance we see on the male side from men's physique all the way to men's bodybuilding. So on what I think is done well on the male side is the understanding of the level of condition that needs to be reached for each class in order to bring about the loading strategy that lands the peak on stage. What I think on the female side is done fairly poorly is comparison of the condition relative to the class standard and knowing how we can potentially use the peaking strategy to bring someone back up to the class specific needs. And so we've talked about this a bit before in regards to when we look at some of those lower classes like bikini and wellness, and not lower from because wellness has a lot of muscularity now, but like from a conditioning standard standpoint, talking about how a lot of times we'll take them past what's needed for the class and load them into it and some of the benefits for that. I think there's a lot around that we could potentially initially pull out of just like, you need to understand the class requirements as a coach, especially if you're a male coaching females, because your psychological preference of what you like to see on stage can greatly skew how you coach someone and remove your objectivity of what's actually going to win in a class like bikini wellness if you're not good at comparing them relative to the class standard.
Yeah, I think if you're coaching a lot of, say, WPD, and you start getting a few bikini clients, you might have a preferential bias to, like, bring them in more conditioned and use those same type of strategies with that kind of female over what you should be doing with the bikini athlete. I think just you need to be going to shows as well and really seeing this in person to know. Because even now with, like, the 4K footage, like, being there, there's nothing like it to really see. And that stage photos, and even compared to seeing what they're leaving, like the hotel room, like doesn't always translate the same depending on the different stage setup. It could look completely different, which is wild too. So I think you need to have experience going to shows, seeing it in person and at the right shows. So this isn't the local level, because you get people that, I don't know why my bikini client did do well. She's like right on par. It's like, yeah, the local level, you're going to have such variety in judges that is going to be part of it. Then once you get up to the national level or definitely the pro level, you're going to really see that. I feel like the judging will be more standard and representative of what you really want to bring your athlete on stage with. And so that does bring into some of the question around, are you peaking your client for the level that they're competing at or the division standard? Because sometimes if you have some girl that actually shows up on par for, say, wellness at a local show, she might look like extremely conditioned at the local level, but look right for the pro level. Now, I think I would still peak them like they should be on par for the division, because if they are that on par, they're going to stand out either way, be kind of undeniable in that capacity. And also, you're looking ahead. So if they're ready for that next step, you should be taking them there. Maybe they don't have to be completely 100% peaked for that local show. But I would still lean to bringing them right for a show, because they'll stand out. I think they'll place well either way. So I've had some coaches with like that perception as well. It can work if you have like a complete girl that's like a freak, but I would hate to also show up and then have that other girl show up that's also the freak, and then you're just a little softer than what you should be.
This happened to me this year. Nari didn't do well. So we didn't have to do a regional qualifier for Nari. She had gotten third at the Amateur O last year, but we just wanted to do a practice run before Nationals. When we got third at our regional qualifier, stood out, and then she went and won a pro card the next week. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe take the regional level for the grain of salt, with a grain of salt attend a little bit, right? So I think that does kind of lead us into potentially class-specific peaking needs, because one of the things, especially in those lower classes, is just like fatigue tends to be quite a bit higher. I find my peak week a lot of times with girls, especially in the high cardio states and low foods, depending on where they, you know, started prep or what that process looked like. Peak week's not peak week. It's peak 10 days or peak 14 days or peak whatever days. It's like extending out a little bit further than the actual peak week, because the actual fatigue drop is coming from a little bit of a higher fatigue state. You're also dealing with lower body weight, so cardio does tend to trend up a little bit more on average than you would like a competitive bodybuilder. So I think some concepts into maybe how we break down that deload would be helpful, because I do tend to find the peak weeks from a fatigue drop standpoint differ quite a bit female-wise than my males, just on the average.
Yeah, and so I think just for one, looking at a lot of people go into peak week thinking like the carb up is coming, and I, at least that's how I see a lot of people bring it up, like when does food come in? And they're not realizing how much of the peaking process would be just the fatigue drop, and how much like weight starts really pulling off someone. They look more conditioned once we lower that output, because all the cardio, really all the training in general, it's all driving a degree of stress in the body, which causes some inflammation and water retention to occur. So once you're in peak week, a lot of times pulling back on cardio, you start seeing people have that water drop off. Then all that fat loss that had been occurring along the way is now, you're just seeing that now come visually into fruition. And sometimes that's plenty for a division to now be completely stage ready. And why I would say like the deloading and fatigue drop is almost more the peak than even adding in food. Because with some of the divisions, say bikini, where there's not a lot of muscularity, they're not looking for someone to be exploding full like you would with a bodybuilder and shredded to the bone. So you don't need someone to be that full, but you just need them to be on par condition-wise, and that's really it. So if you are able to pull off some of that fatigue, that's enough to just have them on par for condition. Then I've had females where we just don't even change the diet going into the show, and just dropping off fatigue and having them be a little fresher is plenty. And there's a lot of benefits around that too, with dropping off fatigue, because someone all of a sudden will start sleeping better, have better sleep. You're also going to have less prep, just overall is going to feel easier after that. So the deficit and peak, you're kind of pulling out of a deficit. There's less perception of effort there. You're less food focused. So it makes the post-show period more manageable as well. Makes posing practice easier. And then you can get on stage and you don't feel like you're going to get put through the ringer or put through the ringer. So there's a lot of benefits to just focusing on the fatigue drop. But with females, like you mentioned, Luke, is that a lot of times there is a large amount of cardio that needs to be put in place, because they just don't have a lot of ground to pull out of the diet alone like a male. You know, we could create a 1,000-calorie deficit in a male, but for a female, that's tough when maybe their start point is 1,600 calories at the beginning of a prep. So it ends up being a lot of cardio, a lot of output, which then causes that fatigue rise, and main thing being output-based fatigue versus just dietary. Now, I will say for females, one of the differentiating points between males is that they are able to handle like a higher volume in general. And there is a greater percentage with training of type 1 muscle fiber. So they are a little bit better suited for like longer duration type cardio and can recover from it. Unlike a male, that's why it works like shit for guys. But for females, like, you have to push them there. But at some point, like, cardio can get so high that it's a real challenge, and it becomes still that issue where you're seeing someone visual skewed from retaining a lot of water. So what are you seeing, like, competitive wise, like, how much are you able to pull someone back? Because people are like, well, how much do you pull someone back? Right. And some people aren't able to get there. Right.
Yeah. When you say pull someone back, you're saying like drop pull cardio. Them down, drop cardio. Yeah.
Yeah. When you start pulling back on cardio and decreasing it, like, some people can get a lot out. Some people can't.
The differentiating factor is two things I see. One, how ideal is the timeline? So, like, if the timeline's pretty ideal where they're ready ahead and then I can go ahead and start dropping it off. The hard part is, again, because the body weights are lower, the cardio gets higher. When you start to drop cardiovascular activity from the plan, we can't really see that drop too much for some, because you'll start to see that body weight actually reverse. Like, it's almost like they're going into a surplus. Like, you're starting to see it climb a bit, and you actually have to keep a bit of activity in there to keep them around where you want them going into loading. So, like, let's say it's not uncommon for a female to get somewhere between 70 to 90 minutes of cardio. I think that that's fairly common for preps. I've definitely seen higher. But let's say, like, from a 75-minute cardiovascular activity, by peak week, they're probably doing 30-ish, 30 to 40. So it's about a 50% reduction that I'll get into, like, that beginning part of the week. And then a lot of times towards the back end, they're like just steps in 15 to 20 minutes. The one thing I will say is I tend to drop steps less with those athletes because, again, the body weight metric, the steps are not as fatiguing. And it allows them to keep some activity in for motility. And it does. I just don't see the step count drop contributing to large changes in visuals from a fatigue drop standpoint. So I really still keep cardio in. It's just I'm not keeping them up at the 75-minute mark, where a lot of guys, you can almost go into full removal, like, on that forefront, right? Like, you can really just dial them back to steps and they're good to go. But 10,000 steps at 230 is a lot different than 10,000 steps at 115. And so that's kind of where a lot of it changes. In regard to that, I think the one mistake, and I'm going to let you kind of dive into this. I know this is something you've seen as well, and we've talked about this. Previous year judge feedback being come fuller is not always be fuller. It's have more muscle. And, oh, that drives me up a wall, because, like, you have the client who looks their best with no to minimal loading, right? So we talked about even some girls will just hold their diet through peak week, or the carbohydrates that come in are very minuscule relative to their baseline diet. And that what brings the best visual relative to their class standard. But because that previous year feedback is, I need to be fuller, they're wanting to drive that food much higher. And there's almost like a letdown with that peak week experience that food's not coming in at the rate that it should be. So when it comes to the fatigue drop, I almost see psychological expectations of the peak contributing to how well that goes, just as much as whether I drop it to 40 or 30 minutes. Because, like, if they're psychologically stressed about the fact they're not getting food, man, that can send someone down a whirlwind really quickly.
With that, I mean, even when someone's ready for a show, the idea is to bring them back to a maintenance level, mm-hmm. to where you just hold that condition, ride that into the show relatively. So, and yes, we talk about fatigue drop through output, but also it's finding kind of the lesser evil of where they're tolerating that. And then what is the worst evil, right? Like, is it the cardio? Like, I hate cardio. Like, this is beating the shit out of me. It's going to battle every day doing it. Or is it the diet? Like, I'm starving all day. I would rather do cardio anytime. Then maybe we should use one of those others than just assume that it's the cardio that we should be dropping off. So if that person psychologically is really struggling dietary-wise, maybe it is worth bringing up the food. However, there's going to be people that what they want and what they need are absolutely going to differentiate in that point too. So you have to weigh that in as a coach. Cause I have some people where you bring up food just a little bit and they're so reactive to just send body weight up and get softer quick. And they would have been better off just lowering cardio and not changing the diet. And I've had to do that where I've had clients where I'm like, all right, let's bring up food. And then I have to pull it back because I just see their visuals getting skewed softer really, really quick. So you think with a female, like I've had females that are on 1,000 calories. So, you know, adding in 25 grams of carbohydrate for the day, which sounds like nothing, that's 100 calories. That's a 10% increase in calories. That's extremely impactful. So especially if they're also really far from their body weight set point and they're more adapted, that could be more responsive too. You have females that are also adaptive the opposite way, where you could keep pushing up food and they just stay at maintenance, and that's awesome. But not every female is like that. So you see your other female competitor, and we know females, you like, you know, send your check-in pics to all your girls and see your diet and what's going on. So if you have that female friend that, you know, her peak week looks like she has a robust amount of food, just know that might not be you. Because there's so many people that differentiate in that adaptive response to feeding, and it's okay if you have low food, but like what Luke is saying around judge feedback is that it's been tough with the terminology that we use from a judge and what they actually mean by that. And I would assume that, and make this really simple, for one, on losing body fat. This one gets me a lot of times because you'll see the term, you need it to be harder, you need it to be drier. Maybe even they talk about being more density. And so it's like, man, what the hell do all these terms different look? More, or you need to be fuller. So you have like four different terms maybe, or leaner. So there are five different terms that could all be close to the same thing of more muscle, less body fat. And I would just assume that nothing is water related. Just assume it's body fat. If they tell you need to be drier, just assume you need to lose more body fat, because that's going to be the easier step. And likely that most of the time, 9 times out of 10 times what I see, usually that's it. It's not that you just missed your peak of manipulating water. It was just you needed to be leaner. And getting leaner, you'll look on par for your division, especially for the divisions that could be at higher body fat levels. Or if it's, hey, you need to be harder, that doesn't mean you need to peak different with your water. You probably just need to lose more body fat. The same thing goes for getting fuller. When you have a small muscle, you can only fill it out so much. And that degree that you're feeding to fill that out, it might not be substantial enough for the look that they want, even where you're seeing the other visuals start skewing. Because if you're going to get a muscle fuller, you're going to sacrifice some condition level. It's going to happen. So actually to strike the balance of a physique that has a degree of fullness on stage, but also the division level condition, that might be the best you're going on stage with. To get any fuller, you're going to get softer. To tighten up those areas back up, you're going to flatten out the body parts that you wanted fuller. It's really hard to try to all of a sudden, hey, fill out your delts more, but keep your glutes and hamstrings exactly as shredded. Usually there's a trade-off always. So the real thing when someone says, hey, you need to be fuller in your chest, or I was thinking about guys, like fuller in your glutes or your quads, that absolutely is just going to mean more muscle mass. That doesn't mean your next peak come around that the coach didn't carb you up enough. Just assume when they say fuller, get more muscle, because that also isn't going to hurt you in the future either. And every prep is going to be different. So I have females that, you know, you want to give your input around, hey, maybe I should have carved up different, had more food in place. That if you've gone through a whole off season, like the peak could be completely different, especially around, you're probably better as a competitor and have a better environment for prepping, to where you didn't have to get as low in food. And in other words, you also won't have to come up as high in food. If you are that female that could push food up higher, a lot of times you might be at a already a set point that's brings a level of fullness that's right on par for the division. So to Luke's point, absolutely. Just if they say anything around getting fuller, think about building muscle. Anything around not looking as hard, just assume it's body fat. If you do those things, it'll make everything so much clearer for you of what you need to do to improve show to show.
Yeah, and I want to extend this line of logic a bit further, and I'm not really a role play kind of guy, but John, we're gonna do this just to get a point across. The judges said I needed to be drier, and we didn't use the AR or the CIRM. Isn't that what we needed to be drier on stage?
Right on. Yeah, and because a lot of skewed preps, right? Like we see in females, estrogen is made out to be the root issue of water retention. And if you look at most females that are dieting, what happens, ladies? You lose your menstrual cycle on prep. What does that mean? Where is estrogen produced? At the ovaries. So if you're not having a menstrual cycle anymore, you're also having very, very low estrogen production. This is at your tail end of prep. So if you have low estrogen to begin with, why would you use something that's going to block the estrogen receptor or try to lower aromatization of estradiol into estradiol? It doesn't make any sense. It's complete fallacy. And I see lab work on females. I'll pull these things and estradiol will be like less than 20 picogram per mil, like menopausal levels, right? It's not even there. Putting in the AI or the SERM has zero benefit to bring about to a physique. Mm-hmm. And really whereas estradiol is not the root driver for water retention, it's more so that it rises up aldosterone. Mm-hmm. But in that situation, if you have someone that, hey, I don't have a menstrual cycle, I am potentially holding some water, say that is a thing, I would guarantee that it's not around estrogen. And usually in females, we're not using a ton of PD, so it's not driven up by high amounts of testosterone or nandrolone. That's your rear issue. The one that Luke and I first talked about is managing fatigue. It's someone that you probably didn't pull off cardio and deload training early enough, because when you have high levels of cortisol, cortisol binds the mineralocorticoid receptor, just like aldosterone does, and has a more robust effect on water retention. This is the same reason, ladies, while if you have a really poor night to sleep or you're stressing before your show and you wake up and you look really watery, this is cortisol. It is causing water retention. So what I would look at more so is early in the week, hey, was I able to get to a state of good recovery and drop off that fatigue? And the AI, the SERM, is not the go-to. And I haven't used one in a female in a very, very long time. And that's not our peak week strategy for when you already have low estrogen. It's just it's assessing incorrectly and deploying the wrong tool for the job you're trying to bring about. So same thing goes with other androgens we see in females, like in the higher divisions, like WPD. There's going to be a low amount of estrogen present. You probably already have enough androgen present, and that's what we're looking to kind of, you could skew the androgen to estrogen ratio to make someone look, you know, visually a little different. However, estrogen's already really low, and androgens are probably high enough to do that job. It still comes down to managing fatigue well, then also just having someone get enough carbs in so they're not flat. And that's really all that would be done. And I really think just, and we'll get to the water piece. I won't touch that just yet, but as far as the estrogen component, that's one that probably doesn't need to be touched most of the time. There's rare instances, but again, most of the time, that's not the solver to get your female hard on stage. Usually, it's still around body fat. Like, hey, you just need to lose body fat. And is it estrogen limiting body fat loss? Well, not if it's already low anyway. You know, that's not going to be your issue anyway. So,
as a shameless plug, I do cover a case in which an AI could be used in an emergent situation within level two. So if you're ready for level two, you should check that out. But to kind of extend the point, like that's why the first thing I brought up was the peak week situation, because man, I've run peak weeks with females where fatigue drop is 10, 11, 12 days on preps that I had to run rate of loss a bit higher. And it takes the full 10, 11, 12 days to really do that well. And I've even to the point that with national level girls where they've got like that regional a week before the pro qual or maybe 2 weeks before, it's almost like that first peak is more so the start of the fatigue drop, and it doesn't really finish until the pro qual. And so like that's so valuable, because I've seen some pretty large shifts percentage wise of body weights and visual improvement on girls, like like in the figure class, like, you know, a lot of those girls compete, you know, somewhere between 125 to 145, something in that realm, depending on height, you're seeing like 5-6 pound shifts on a 135 pound girl, which is percentage wise a large shift, you know? So, it's so integral, and I think it's an aspect that needs to be done a little bit better on the female side.
Yeah, I think the hormone piece, like if you have that female that is extremely resilient to dieting processes and she's able to continue to have a menstrual cycle throughout prep, and you're as a coach, you're watching and seeing how those changes fluctuate from, you know, her in, within her cycle, that the hormone manipulation might be impactful the last week of in that prep. But for a lot of females, that's not the case, because most are getting pretty adapted along the way. But that also doesn't mean like, hey, you need a AI or CIRM like 8 weeks out from your show. And that's where you see like constantly suppressed estrogen levels would be limiting an actual, because estradiol on its own has great components around anabolism, so muscle retention, also for joint integrity and just health for the female. So if we can retain it, you know, that's perfectly great. But at some point for the female that's resilient, maybe there might be some influence there that we can manipulate. But for most of the time, it's just, it's not needed. And then that goes back to what is your division requirement? If you're making the assumption that, hey, I needed to get harder, that just lose more body fat. And you might not need to go to that water manipulation. It is finding the balance though, right, Luke? Because if you have the female, because you brought up earlier, like, hey, diet them a little bit more than what they need to be, then you have the opportunity to fill them back out. It might be for some, dieting them a little bit more to get leaner, to then just be able to have like freedom to eat. That those extra pounds pulling off might be some really hard fat loss, to where the fatigue aspect is extremely challenging to manage over a long course of a prep. So that is something to weigh out if you're going to push someone down a little bit more. But again, it's a decision process, that thought process that Luke and I want to share and make sure like you take away the big picture here, and but realize there's going to be a few outliers of where you need to make those manipulations. And I think we can also address now, Luke, the carb up process around for females.
Do you want to touch like front loading versus back loading, or kind of how do you want to kind of cover that? Because there's multiple ways to look at it.
I think just one, the general idea around the amount of carb needed for the female muscle mass wise, and when carb ups might not be needed, and maybe it's more just keeping fats in place.
Yeah. So understand there's genetic outliers here. I've certainly had female preps where food gets pretty high across peak week in these genetic outlier specific metabolic cases. But on the average, I think a lot of times when we start looking at loading females, the fatigue drop is the first part, but then the second part is stability and response. Using a little bit of fats for intramuscular triglycerides. But also when we go into, like John pointed out, the percentage of carbohydrate addition relative to their diet. I do like to look at it from a percentage basis relative to kind of how males operate within that loading process. And this is where in the loading testing, I do a lot in regards to picking the methodology of loading in order to drive some of the loading strategies I use on the back end. So what that looks like within a prep is, if we're testing a peak or a loading strategy across like 3 weeks out or 2 weeks out, not only taking pictures across the load, but taking pictures the day after and the 2 days after and the 3 days after to see if we're getting that response of improvement in visuals a couple of days post load, which then starts to drive the loading strategy of like front load, back load. Because the benefit of females is you're not dealing with weight caps. You can do whatever the frick you want in regards to loading strategies. And so that's a big aspect of loading for me, because on the male side, you're forced a lot of times, like weight caps and making weight really force the back load on your hand, right? And so if I'm able to pick the loading strategy, it also tells me how aggressive I can be. So from a percentage basis of what's added, I'm adding typically percentage wise on the average a little bit more aggressively on the front load because I know I'm going to be able to let it wash off and I can do things to wash it off. Where if I'm like backloading or linear loading into a show, I have to be a little bit more reserved because I don't want them like jumping way up and then I'm, you know, 8 hours out with the athlete 2 pounds above where I wanted him on stage.
Yeah, right. That is the beauty with all these female divisions, that you don't have that weight cap. And so you have flexibility in what's going to work best for them. So for one, I think it's a great testing strategy as well. If you don't have the opportunity to test a peak, front loading someone can give you those extra days of adjustment to pull back if you really need to. Especially like that's what I usually do is start with like the linear load. Once I get cardio to some type of baseline that's reasonable, I can start bringing up food every day that I can see that response. And then off that, I'll be like, okay, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm not going to be able to like carb load this person. And I might not have had the opportunity during their prep to do like refeeds and track that data either. So that would be a great strategy. But once you learn that client, you could utilize maybe more of a backload strategy that could be more aggressive where you know their response. So like Renee is one that I can backload with, and she just is the one that gets very adapted. And so food will go up, up, up. And even on one day out, it's like, oh man, you still need more food. So while other females have had a bikini athlete where food comes up, it's like, whoa, like you actually are way better with less food. And there's a figure athlete too this year, or we're now 2024 last year, where it was actually best just to run her baseline diet, which was near like proteins and fats, without bringing any more carbs in. So the complete opposite. Also, it's not just about being full in condition on stage. It's also about presenting a taper I want to call it an hourglass frame or an X frame for a female. So a lot of females, when you coach them, they're huge on wanting being to control their waist on stage. And man, power to these females, because like especially wellness, it is like nonstop vacuum in the most contorted, twisted place you can be. So to be able to have that posing endurance and control your waist on stage is a component you need to think about when you're going to be using strategies to carb load these girls. So if you can have them full enough, like doing a backload to where on show day, they wake up and they don't need a lot of food to get on stage, that can be a great aspect for waist control. So some of those females, they just want like, hey, just a little bit of protein fats before going out, or just carbs and fats, like smallest volume possible. But there's just a lot of ways to be able to work these divisions to bring about that correct look. But I will say more so in female divisions, they're smaller muscle that doesn't require a lot of food, a lot of carbohydrate. And they also might have to been pushed past that body fat set point a lot farther, to where they're going to be a lot more responsive to carb up, to where they just need a even smaller amount or none at all. Like you have to remember, like the female metabolism, it does tend to be a bit more fat dominant over carbohydrate dominant. So they do well with like higher fat diets than males. So you might just leave in for that female that's been doing a lot of cardio, doing very low carbs and just protein fats. She might just want to stick to proteins and fats going in, because that's usually the female where you bring a little bit of carbs in and the visuals get skewed right away off just a couple meals. So there's just a lot of variations. And what Luke and I are bringing up, I would say more so than males because of those factors that I just listed. So you just have to watch them all the way when they're ready earlier, day by day, look at them after a few meals, look him after training, so you can see how that food impacts them visually, to where you don't get to just peak week and show day or one day out, and now you're starting to look at the meal by meal visuals, and you're like, oh damn, like I don't really know what to do because we had one meal and I haven't seen him like this. But if you've been tracking that earlier before peak week happened, you'd have a really idea off those food responses to give you a rough framework to do and deploy once you're into peak week.
Yeah, and I think that covers the majority of the issues you would see just like on a potential like problem to solutions basis. I think, look, the real thing is like the variety in females is so wide. I think it's much wider than peaking males. And just understanding those tenets of like the things to look for first is huge and really guide that decision-making process if you do data collection, correct?
Yeah, I think so. It's, we don't need to, for one, like translate all the male stuff you do to females. I mean, we are all humans. So some of that framework is the same. Just with females, it should be a little bit on the smaller scale, but there's a lot of differentiating factors where females are unique. And I think with what Luke and I brought up, like don't underestimate the fatigue drop for peaking for a female, and also just getting body fat to a right point can be more than enough to just walk someone out stage. Don't be scared of not having this really complicated peak week, layout to get someone on stage. The carb up process for many is very simple, and you just walk them out there on show day with data that you've already used throughout the week of what you know they look their best after how much food and how much fluid, and all these female compounds that have been utilized or to make them hard usually is not the root issue. It's probably more so around fatigue management and not actually smashing down estradiol. So that's kind of your quick high-level framework of what we discovered. But if you have comments or questions on this stuff, leave them down below. One thing Luke can mention is that our level 2 will be coming out very, very soon for February, which this will be the J3U physique coach credential. So this will be if you've done level 1, AHO, and the female module. Those are prerequisites to level 2. Then our level 2 will be one of the most comprehensive case study physique courses around, where Luke and I, we've taken all of our clients and we lead you through 14 weeks of case studies from females, males, all divisions, off season, into the pre-prep phase, into contest prep, into peak week, into post show, looking at all these scenarios. So you'll actually see us with client check-ins, making those updates, and give you the decision process that you need to really elevate your level as a coach. And then ending this with being able to be a credentialized physique coach, knowing you've gone through a curriculum that is based around coaching-driven results and not just off information in the textbook. So Luke and I are both really excited. So that is to come. But again, if you have questions or comments around just female, specifically peak week, please leave them down below if you're watching on YouTube and all of our other audio streaming services. Thank you for watching, and we will talk to you next time.